You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Human trafficking is a multi-billion dollar criminal industry that denies freedom to almost 25 million people around the world. Globally, there are two general categories of human trafficking. There is sex trafficking and there is labor trafficking. And Idaho isn't immune to this crime. Joining us live today to talk more is Jennifer Zielinski. She is the executive director of the Idaho Anti-Trafficking Coalition. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
So, Jennifer, can we start the conversation by talking about the two types of human trafficking that I mentioned? So maybe let's start with, and you can kind of define what we mean when we say sex trafficking.
Well, when we're talking about sex trafficking, we are talking about sex acts. The definition for human trafficking in general is a crime that is used through some type of force, fraud, or coercion. Sex acts or human sex trafficking, that's done so for the purpose of sexual exploitation. Mm. When we're talking about human trafficking in general, it exploits an individual in various areas. Our focus area is primarily sex trafficking, although we recognize the overlap with labor trafficking and sex trafficking. Really difficult to separate when we're looking at specific environments, working conditions, maybe in businesses, maybe in households. And so there may be an overlap. But typically, when we see some type of crime, such as drug trafficking, those high crime areas, we are coming across more cases, actually a lot more cases of human sex trafficking as part of those crimes. So that's really our big focus area.
And I think it's important to note then when we talk about human trafficking, whether we're talking about sex trafficking or labor trafficking, we need to be clear that, you know, that not all labor exploitation or frankly, commercial sex is trafficking. So with that being said, Jennifer, what makes something human trafficking?
When something, so the act itself is done so through some type of coercive tactic based on fraud or false promises, fake contracts. The other areas is coercion. When you're luring someone in, that may be done so through those false promises, manipulation through fake relationships or exploiting someone by manipulating them through maybe drug use or using their vulnerabilities against them. If someone's facing homelessness or is homeless, someone is dealing with some type of substance use and then using that as a way to coerce or control somebody. Typically, it's someone who is held against their will. And a lot of times that manipulation and fraud prevents the victim from even recognizing that they are a victim. They may not realize that they're being held against their will, but it could be some type of blackmail or withheld personal items or documents or threats against them or their family members. Legitimate issues that boil down to some type of coercive act, some fraudulent act, force, and then the individual themselves is not, it's not within their decision making. They've not decided to sexually exploit themselves or exploit themselves through some type of labor. They're not capitalizing off of those acts. There's a third party, there's a fourth party, there's other individuals that are capitalizing that it's a huge money maker. And the victim themselves is used as the tool, their product. They're the ones that are used to make money. And in the case that we're talking about, individuals are used for the purpose of sexual pleasure, for someone else's sexual pleasure. And then that third party is capitalizing. They're making money off of it. There's a profit there. But the victim themselves, they're not capitalizing. They're not making any profit. It's not, it's very different than prostitution in that where an individual would choose to this line of work.
Correct. I mean, there is a true difference between someone who chooses mm-hmm. to be a sex worker and then, as mm-hmm. you said, someone who has not made that choice and then, frankly, not profiting off it themselves.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. So then how do we know what trafficking looks like? And I asked this, Jennifer, because everything that I've ever read about human trafficking, in particular human sex trafficking, makes it clear that it is likely right under our noses sometimes, but it's not necessarily easy to detect. So right. are there those red flags and those signs? Because it seems like maybe no.
There are some indicators. They do overlap with other indicators of potential domestic violence, sexual assault, other criminal activity as well. And unfortunately, it is hard to detect, but those red flags are they're critical. They're important for the community to pay attention to. Most victims can't or won't self-identify for various reasons. And oftentimes it's due to risk factors if the community isn't set up to support victims. And that would mean everyone involved. But those indicators could look like an individual that's not dressed appropriately for the environment that they're in. If they seem coerced, if they have canned answers, oftentimes they're attached to an older person, an older man, if you will, and then the victim doesn't look like they may be related, or maybe they're pretending to be related. Oftentimes, in a business environment that someone may be living in the business that they're working at, that happens a lot with the pop-up businesses that we're seeing. There's over 200 illicit massage parlors in the state of Idaho, and those wow. businesses is where you'll see the overlap of labor trafficking and sex trafficking. Mm. And then those individuals are primarily living within that establishment. So the red flags can also look like substance use or some type okay. of physical abuse. Oftentimes it may be someone who's much younger and, again, doesn't look like it fits in that environment. If there's a lot of tenants maybe coming to and from a house or even a business, individuals that seem like they're not able to move freely or they don't speak for themselves. And then we have in Idaho, we're seeing a lot of community type human trafficking where it may be cultural, maybe within the household or within the community that they're living within. And that is really difficult to detect because the victim and or victims are trained to live this double life. So they're trained what to say, how to act. Mm-hmm. This is how you are in this environment, and this is how you are in this environment. So having those two different lifestyles. And so it may be within an establishment or business such as a hotel or a motel or even major events that are happening, but it just doesn't look right. You have someone who just doesn't seem dressed appropriately for that environment. So paying attention to those, and someone who seems pretty withdrawn. And like I said, maybe the image is that there's substance use of some sort, exhausted, or the physical appearance of abuse, and maybe even lavish gifts. That's one of the beginning processes of grooming someone. We'll be showering them with gifts and money, oftentimes multiple cell phones for various forms of communication. And then if somebody does see some of these warning signs and it just doesn't make sense, we would encourage anyone to call 911, make the call, and then call the National Human Trafficking Hotline. They'll document that, and then they'll funnel those calls directly to their point of contacts within that state, which in this case would be Idaho. We would be one of those point of contacts.
Jennifer, I want to spend this next segment really digging into Idaho and these local issues, because we are not immune to human trafficking. In fact, I believe that your organization, you've helped more than, 400 people who they've self-identified, correct?
Mm-hmm. So this past year, we have served 401 individuals. And out of the 401, we had 109 self-identify. And that number is, on a national level, a really high number for self-identification. It shows that there is a level of trust. And in our case, we've worked really hard the past couple of years to create some equal partnerships within the community. And what we've recognized as lifelines, if someone is in the need of crisis care or emergency housing or shelter, relocation assistance, we'll provide those direct victim assistance and then rely on our community partners for that soft handoff to ensure that they're, that there's a community of support, there's a community of services. So really that continuum of care and that interdisciplinary sense of partnerships and community, it's an agreement. It's through like-minded approaches and ensuring that victim-centered approach. And so that's why we're seeing a higher number of individuals self-identifying, because there's a trust factor. We can at least ensure that through housing assistance or direct referrals, a lot of that emotional safety or advocacy support, that we have that soft handoff.
And we did mention that you have a 24-hour crisis hotline that people can call or text. I'm curious, with that number, especially with that amount of people self-identifying, are you seeing an increase or decrease in people calling or texting, asking for help?
We've seen a huge increase, and actually it is deemed a lifeline, whereas before there wasn't a specific hotline statewide that was utilized specific to human trafficking, whereas other crisis hotlines throughout the state beneficial and have been great assistance. This is now specific to human trafficking, where an individual can contact us, and whether they identify or not, it's pretty clear that they're contacting us because it's related to human trafficking. This past year, we were able to assist in over 1,229 direct phone calls through our crisis hotline.
Wow.
And the ability to text our case managers is also part of that lifeline, because they can access us if they're in a crisis situation, if, again, if their life is in danger, if they're fleeing a trafficking situation, and they connect, case managers can respond and provide that relocation assistance.
So I have about a minute left, Jennifer, and I want to know if we had to give Idaho a grade on how we are doing in terms of helping people in these situations, where are we?
Well, unfortunately, we do have a grade through the Shared Hope International. They're tasked with grading each state, and based on our laws and our service provisions and really the system itself, how is it set up? And it's based on a legislative framework. And right now we're sitting at an F. We're sitting at an F because we really are lacking specific laws that mandate prevention and training for local, state, county agencies. And that's where the safety provisions come in as well. But victim-centered, continuum of care, access to a justice system that is specific to human trafficking, criminal provisions, we're lacking appropriate criminal provisions, the arrests and thorough investigations. And unfortunately, the crime itself isn't identified enough throughout the state of Idaho. So pushing for legislative changes, increased laws and amendments to our current laws. So I really do believe that this current report card that came out, again, from Shared Hope International, that it's an opportunity for us to utilize this great tool that shows us there's a complete layout of how we can implement an appropriate continuum of care, service of care, and really, really improve our statewide service approaches to be victim-centered.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today, Jennifer. We've been talking with the executive director of the Idaho Anti-Trafficking Coalition, Jennifer Zielinski. If you or someone you know may be experiencing human trafficking, you can call or text the 24-hour Idaho Anti-Trafficking Resource Hotline, 208-630-6601. More Idaho Matters next.